How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Haunted Cafe.
Saw.
What were you looking at?
A fly.
Oh, a ghost?
Ghost fly. A ghostly fly.
I don't know what to say. Today's episode is one of the usual ones, kind of. Only we're talking more on the true crime side than the, paranormal and spooky side.
Ooh.
Spooky. Oh, do the thing. I don't know what episode number we're on, but...
I have no idea.
I think like 25 or something.
Episode number 20-something!
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a minute.
Yeah, it has been a minute.
I forgot about that, honestly.
Oh, and yeah, so Alan is bringing us into the next part. We're actually drinking tea today.
Yeah.
Which is like, never happens lately.
No, not lately.
Yep. So, you want to talk about what you have?
I have Twinnings... of London, established 1706, 216 The Strand, London, WC2, England. I have pure oolong tea. And the ingredients is just oolong tea, so you know it's pure.
Yep.
And it tastes really good. I don't know what else to say about it. Oh, yeah. We haven't done this in a minute, so I don't remember what we used to do.
And there's links for all these teas and drink, and all that stuff down in the description below.
I'm drinking the oolong tea hot right now, but believe me when I say it tastes a heck of a lot better cold.
Yeah. And I'm also going to try linking our mugs, too, or at least mugs that are as close as I can get to ours, in case you really like them and want to buy them yourself.
Yep.
I have a stash, which comes in...
We still have this. We've had this for a very long time. I think we've had this box for it. The box itself, without even including the Haunted Cafe, we've had it for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and it's still got teas in it.
It's still got plenty of teas in it.
But I'm going to like try and find this again and link that too. Just so you can get everything that we have.
Yeah. If you don't drink tea a lot, but you still like to drink tea, that stash box is definitely well worth it because it was wrapped in a bow. We got it for Christmas, but we got it for Christmas like 3 or 4 years ago. And we don't really drink tea too much, like on a regular basis, so that it's lasted us a very long time.
Yeah, and it was also like Christmas gift to you.
Yeah, it was specifically to me.
Yeah, but we both ended up using it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm drinking decaf Earl Grey tea.
Earl Grey by Stosh.
And it's got black tea and bergamot oil.
Oh.
Leviosa. So let's drink our teas.
Ah, tastes good.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I'm drinking out of a...
cacti.
I almost said cactus, which is right, but it took me a minute to figure out how to say it.
I think cacti is many and cactus is one.
I thought it was the opposite, but I'm probably definitely wrong. And then Alan's drinking out of a coffin.
It's a coffin, all right. Witch's Brew cauldron.
Cauldron. That's what I was trying to say, but it came out coffin.
This actually broke a while ago, and I had to glue the leg back on. Did you? Yeah, remember it broke on the tip here. You can still see it.
Oh.
Remember?
I forgot about that, chipped. Yeah,
it fell off and chipped, and I super glued the bitch back on. And it's fine. That was like a year ago.
I don't think it's dishwasher safe, so that's probably why it's lasted for so long. But alright, so now that we did our long introduction, ready to get into the story?
Hello, everybody. Yeah.
I don't think anybody answered you.
Why the hell are you ignoring me?
You haven't called me. So today, we're going to be talking about the guy who wouldn't die.
The man who couldn't be killed?
Yeah. Literally, he could not be killed.
Until he died.
Yeah. Until he did die, yeah.
Yeah.
It was really messed up. But anyway, his name is Michael Malloy. I might say Mallory, but...
Well, I think it's Malloy. It's Michael Malloy. How's it spelled? Is it with two L's or one L?
It's farther down, but it's M-A-L-L-O-O-Y.
Yeah, I think it's Malloy.
Yeah, that's why I said Malloy.
Malloy.
Malloy. Malloy.
Not Malloy.
It's Malloy. That's how.
Yes, Malloy.
Yes, Malloy. Anyway, so I do want to put a little bit of a viewer discretion thing.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Yeah, it's not exactly gruesome. Like, I don't go into crazy, crazy detail, but the stuff that they do to this poor man, it's a little graphic.
Rated R for rough.
So I wanted to first kind of talk about what the world was like, because this did not happen recently by any means.
Picture Sicily, 1882.
Yeah, I think I might have even said that somewhere down in here. But I say that. Joke. Well, I say that all the time because of Golden Girls.
Yeah.
But so the year was 1933, and our story takes place in New York City.
Hey yo, New York.
New York.
I don't even know if that's right. I had no idea.
And while, like, that sounds great, you know, New York City, where all the dreams come true, that really wasn't the case in this time period. It was actually during the Great Depression, and it happened, kind of started in the 1929.
So sad.
In the 1929s.
In the 1929.
Yeah. It started in 1929 in New York City. I think it kind of hit other places at different times, like some a little bit more sooner, some later, you know. In a matter of 10 weeks, the New York Stock Exchange lost 50% of its value
in 10 weeks. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Businesses failed and the unemployment rate skyrocketed.
No, that's not familiar.
Yeah.
Everywhere's hiring for something.
Just no one wants to do it.
Yeah.
But,
well, not no one wants to do it for the pay, because the pay, half of the time, the pay is highly unfair.
Yeah. Excuse me, I got burp. Oh, no, it went away. By 1932, one in every four workers were unemployed. People began to lose their homes, and in turn, they began to build cardboard shanty towns, which were also known as Hoovervilles, because at the time, the president was Herbert Hoover. And they named it after him because of his ineffective relief policies.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, like, stimulus checks weren't around back then to boost the economy. You know, they just let you suffer. So basically, like, at this time, everyone was super poor. They were wondering where their next meal was going to come from, where they were going to sleep, and where they were going to get their next bit of cash.
Nobody eats bugs anymore.
Juicy does.
Yeah, Juicy from The Boys. He eats bugs.
Yeah.
He'd be fine.
He would be. But, you know, times were tough back then. They were trying to figure out ways to make money that, because there weren't the honest jobs around, people came up with scams, fake insurance claims.
If it was way back in, I think it was like the 1800s, supposedly, during a similar time of that happened, prostitution was a huge thing.
Oh, I'm sure that was happening around here, probably, too.
Because that was the only for sure way for a lot of women to make money back in, mm-hmm. back in that time.
Well, that's during the period of, like, Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that's kind of what happened in this case. Not prostitution, but...
That we know of.
Insurance came. Well, I meant in this case.
Oh, in this case. Okay.
There was no prostitution in this case. This case focuses very heavily on an insurance scam. So, it was also during the Prohibition. So, alcohol and stuff was very hush-hush, and everyone was, like, sneaking for drinks.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
No, I was going to say, you were talking about insurance fraud, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm always reminded, whenever somebody says that, my ADHD mind goes to those old vines, to where, like, not old vines, I mean, they're on TikTok now, too, to where, like, this, like, it's a group of friends, obviously, but there's somebody backing up in a car, and the dude just, like, falls onto the car over, and then the guy holding the camera is like, oh, you hit him, I seen everything.
Yeah, that's basically, extravagant, but that's basically what they tried to do in this story.
Well.
So, on one afternoon in July of 1932, three men met in Marino Speakeasy, which I'm probably going to pronounce these guys' names wrong, like...
If you want me to pronounce it, I will.
A thousand times wrong, but, oh, I mean, we'll try it, but...
If you want to, I'll say it so people don't call you an asshole.
I am an asshole. I'm a dumbass who can't read.
I am an uncultured swine.
I'm a dumbass doing a podcast where I have to read a lot. And
no, see, just... you're a dumbass doing a podcast talking about the past. house. Yo, MCAC in the house.
I did. Yeah,
Gypsy's my hype man.
She was like, that was good.
Say how good it was. Was it good? Yeah. All right. That was cute.
Yeah. But anyway, so these three guys show up at a speakeasy. It's Marino Speakeasy. And they're looking for ways to get some quick cash. Obviously, everybody is. Mm-hmm. Even nowadays, everybody's looking for some quick cash.
Like us.
Yep.
Although we tend to choose methods that aren't quick. Like this podcast, for example, this is not a quick like cash thing at all.
Well, I enjoy doing
it. I know, it's fun, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying it's not like quick. Like this is going to take years before we get anything.
Anyway. So, Tony Marino, which is the owner of the speakeasy. These are the three guys, by the way.
He made maraschino cherries. I'm just kidding. No, that's a different...
That's a completely different thing. Supposedly he was 27. He actually pulled off an insurance scam before, so he kind of knew how all this worked.
I've done it once. I know how it works.
Yeah. The prior year, he had actually befriended a homeless woman named Maybelle Carson and convinced her to take out a $2,000 life insurance policy, naming him as the beneficiary. Which $2,000 isn't a lot now, but back then it was a lot. Yeah,
back then it was a lot.
It's probably what got his speakeasy up, if you think about it.
Yeah, probably.
One frigid night, he force-fed her alcohol, stripped off her clothing, doused her sheets and mattress with ice water, and pushed the bed beneath an open window. The medical examiner listed the cause of death as bronchial pneumonia. I almost said pneumonia. Pneumonia, which is like, you know, in your chest. So she died. Yeah, and she died. That way. And he collected the insurance money without any incident. The next guy, his name is Frank Pasquale. I think that's how you say it. P-A-S-Q-U-A. Pasquale.
Pasquale, yeah.
That's what I'm going to say. He was an undertaker, or also a funeral director.
Oh, yeah?
He was 24 years old. He would take care of the body after death, I guess, like, as his job. And I don't know if these guys were still doing these jobs. Like, obviously, the owner was still the owner of the speakeasy. Yeah. I don't know if Frank was actually still an undertaker. And then there's the third guy. His name was Daniel Kreisberg. He was a 29-year-old grocer and a father of three. He stated as saying that the only reason why he participated in the scam was to provide for his kids. But, obviously, everybody had their own, like... reasons to fake this insurance
their own
policy.
Skeleton in the closet MO.
Yeah. Like, he was like, oh, I'm just providing for my kids.
Sure.
But you would think, like, groceries would be a good
thing. Well, I mean, not with the Depression, because nobody had money to buy groceries at the time, so.
Yeah.
Whatever groceries you had to severely discount, and that
wasn't
completely
even
screwed
enough
up.
To probably pay for the shipment, you know?
You pay for the shipment, let alone keeping the store open, paying the landlord if he had one. I don't know if that was a thing back then.
Yeah, landlords were a thing.
Well, I mean, I know they were a thing, but I'm saying I don't know, like, if someone else had owned the store and he was renting
that
plot.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Like, I don't know about, yeah.
But, so anyway, so they all were sitting around. These three guys were sitting around trying to figure out how are we going to get some kind of money. They came up with this insurance scam, but now they needed a victim. That's when a man named Michael Malloy entered the speakeasy.
Michael Malloy.
Malloy. I'm going to say whatever, okay? So, now let's talk about Michael Malloy. He was 60 years old, which, if you look at his photo, he does not look 65.
And that's a pretty good age to reach during that
time,
too.
Or 65, I'm sorry, 60. If you take I want you to look up a picture of this guy. Because and you guys do at home, too. He does not look 60.
We'll be right back after this intermission.
Yeah. Alright, so he looked up the picture. I'm not sure if this is actually him or not.
Yeah, because there's two different Michael Malloys.
Well, I think that's Frank.
This is Frank Malloy?
No, Frank Pasquale.
Oh.
I don't know exactly what he looks like. All the pictures that pop up show him, like, show the one photo.
Oh, this one?
Yeah. This is supposedly who Michael Malloy is, but I don't think that's him.
No, he's way too young looking.
That's what I was saying. Like, he doesn't look 60 if that's what he's supposedly, you know. Yeah.
And here's the other guy that I don't think is him either, because this dude only looks like he's maybe about fucking 26.
Yeah. If you go on the Wikipedia, which it isn't a reliable source, but if you go on to Wikipedia, it actually shows his, like, death picture. And he looks rough, but he actually, that actually kind of looks like the first picture, though, right?
A little bit.
Yeah, he got fucked up, but we won't show that one. We won't
show that. You guys can look that up on your own.
Yeah, he got messed up. Anyway, so he was supposedly 60 or 24, but I mean, according to his birth date and stuff like that, he was 60. Yeah. So if that is his picture, he looks really great for his age.
Yeah, definitely. Especially for around that time.
But yeah.
Jeez.
And plus, he was a homeless Irish immigrant, a former fireman. He didn't have any he didn't have a wife, he didn't have kids, and no known family. No one really knew anything about him, just that he would occasionally take a job sweeping alleyways or picking up garbage. And instead of wanting money for the jobs, he preferred alcohol.
Here's another photo. It looks like it's a colorized photo. I don't know if it's probably not actually him. It might be an actor. But I imagine, with you saying he was an Irish immigrant or whatever, I imagine this is probably about what he looked like. If y'all can even see that. No, you cannot.
Yeah, you can't. But
there we go.
Just an old, like, Irish grandpa.
Yeah, like an old Irish dude. Because here's one that's in black and white. I don't know if this is them or not either. But that also looks more or less like... I mean, this also looks more or less like how I would imagine an old Irish immigrant from the 1930s to look.
I'm not sure what he looks like.
Yeah.
But you guys, if you know, let me know down in the comments below. Yeah. But anyway, we spent like 10 minutes talking about what he looked like.
Sorry. Anyway. I'm just trying to get a picture, that's all.
Yep. So anyway, so like I said, he would do, like, small jobs for alcohol, not necessarily money. I'm not even really sure if he had anywhere to sleep. It doesn't really talk about it. The Daily Mirror, which is a newspaper, wrote that he was part of the Flotsam and Jetsam He was part of the Flotsam and Jetsam in the swift current of the underworld speakeasy life, those no longer responsible derelicts who stumble through the last days of their lives in a continual haze of Bowery smoke.
Okay, then.
That was really, like, hard to say.
That's a lot of big words.
Yeah, but it's pretty much saying that he just was, like, a guy who was extremely down on his luck and had pretty much given up on any chance of, like, a normal life. So he just, like, drank himself away and didn't care where he slept, you know. It's sad, but that's how people understood him anyway.
Yeah.
And so the three men thought that he would be the perfect victim. No one knew him. He didn't have any family. No one would care that he died. So first they had to take out insurance policies on Michael. Frank Pasquale and a man only known as Nicholas Mallory.
Mallory?
Mallory. It's an E.
Oh, Mallory. Okay, then. Nick Mallory.
started visiting insurance agents. We aren't actually sure who this man is, but now he's number four person that would be getting a cut of this insurance money. After 5 months, they ended up getting three different life insurance policies, all offering double indemnity, which I didn't look that up, but I think that means, like, you still get the money even if it was, like, you know, either a suicide or a self-inflicted death type of thing. And they put it underneath Nicholas Mallory's life. And there were two with Prudential Life Insurance Company and one with the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. Now, at first, I was kind of confused as to why they put it under this Nick guy's name and not actual Michael's name.
Well, probably because they couldn't convince Michael to actually do it.
Well, no, obviously they weren't. But
yeah.
It was more so just because in case someone found out that Michael Mallory died, then they would have, like, you know... They pretty much made a fake person, so that way no one would care that this Nicholas so-and-so died, because no one knew him, you know?
Yeah, yeah. and which was really possible back then. Mm-hmm. Not so much now.
Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. And then they would just take Michael's body, say, "Hey, this is Nick," and that's it. You know.
Yep. There wouldn't be any proof needed. They'd be like, "All right."
Yep.
Another one bites the dust, I guess.
Yeah. So they're basically giving him a fake name.
Yeah.
So now they needed to bring another guy into this scam. So now there's five.
Jeez.
This would be the bartender of the speakeasy. His name was Joseph Murphy. His job was going to be to identify the deceased as Michael, or as Nicholas Mellory, and claim to be his next of kin and beneficiary. So basically, he was going to be Nick's brother.
Yeah, which, once again, a lot easier to do than what it would be now.
So, if everything went to plan, everybody would split $3,576, which doesn't really sound like a lot, but in today's standards, it would be $54,000.
Dang. I wish we had 54 grand right now.
Right? Divided by five people, that would be $10,800 each. For some reason...
Is that still a decent chunk?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 10,000 would be great.
Yeah.
But for some reason, this did not stay between five people and only five people.
it just kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, it was like, this person would hear, so then he wanted in on it, you know.
Now you're just fighting for second place.
Yeah. So, the group would actually expand more before they actually tried killing Michael. So, the people that would jump in are John McNally, Edward Tin Ear Smith, which... I don't know why they called him Tin Ear, because his ear was made of wax. He had an artificial ear, and it was made of wax. Okay. I guess he wanted to sound badass by being Tin Ear.
It's made out of metal.
Yeah.
It can't be out in the sun for long, though.
Yeah.
It'll melt.
Tough Tony Bastone.
They come up with some stupid names back in the day, man. Jeez, like even like the detective crime comics and stuff like that were out like back then, the TV shows.
Yeah.
Like Silver Pants Johnny. Like what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Big Nose Jerome. Like what is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. And then the final guy was Joseph Maglione.
He sounds familiar for some reason. Maglione. I don't know why that name sounds familiar.
I don't know. But eventually all these people would join a group that would be called the Murder Trust by the newspapers. I think, like I said, pretty much how this happened was that these other people heard, like, the original five guys talking about the murder, and they wanted in on the money. Because they would just literally sit around the speakeasy and be like, "All right, so how are we gonna do this?" And then, like, some criminal would pass by and be like, "We're doing a hit, you know? I need a cut now, too, you know?"
I heard what you said. I'm gonna tell the cop if you don't give me nothing.
I just don't think they're really being all that, like, hush-hush about it.
No.
So now there were, like, nine conspirators. 54,000 divided by nine is now left with 6,000 for each of them to split.
That's a dramatic difference.
Yeah, I guess it's not too bad, but it's not too great either, you know? So one night in December of 1932, so literally a whole year later that they, you know, since they decided to come up with this, they decided to start the slow death of Michael, which I feel so bad for this guy.
Yeah.
Their first plan of attack was to let him drink himself to death. According to them, he was already halfway to the grave, so they figured that if they gave him open bar access, he would do the job himself. Which, I know a few people that would probably do that, honestly.
Oh yeah, most definitely, but this guy's Irish, so that's not happening. That is not happening.
No.
Especially if he does that every single day. He'll drink 90% of the people in that bar under the table like it's nothing.
He pretty much did. So, Tony, who was the owner of the bar, he granted Michael basically free rein to all of the drinks, saying that competition from other spoons had forced him to ease up on the rules. Like, you know, because everybody would keep, like, a tab. And you'd have to pay that tab down to, you know, at a certain point. Yeah. So, and obviously, you know, they didn't have to tell Michael twice. That man chugs whatever they put in front of him. As soon as his glass was empty, the bartender refilled it. By the end of the night, Michael was just as pretty much as he was when he arrived. He was not, you know, any more drunker or, you know.
At this point, he's immune.
it was said that his breathing remains steady, and his skin retained its normal ruddy tinge, which is like, you know, a nice red alcohol tinge. Supposedly he wiped his mouth on his sleeve and thanked Tony for the hospitality and said he would be back the next day. And he did show up the next day. This happened for 3 more days.
Wow.
3 days this guy just continued to walk into the bar, drink for hours on end, and then walk back out. According to the website I was reading, he would only stop drinking just enough to eat sardine sandwiches Tony had given him. Ew. Yeah. Beer and sardine does not sound like a good
combo. I mean, Irishmen, they have haggis, for crying out loud, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a normal person would have been pretty messed up on day one, yeah, and even more fucked up by day two. Yeah. I know, I mean, I don't drink at all, so I would be neither under the table after, like, 5 drinks. Probably, yeah, less than
last time we went wine drinking. This was years ago, and the whole day was just bad. But she had, like, 2 glasses, and she was done.
No. I had not just as much to drink as you, but I was drinking, like,
I'm talking about the
4 flights and all that stuff, too.
I'm talking about the time we went with my mom.
Yeah, where you puked?
Yeah, where I puked.
Yeah. I was drinking not just as much as you, but...
Because I had, like, 3 or 4 bottles of wine, and you had, like...
I had some of that wine, too.
Oh, you had some of it.
Well, no shit, Alan. I'm not stupid enough to drink, like, 5 bottles like of wine. I was still feeling it, though.
Yeah.
Because we had, we're going off topic, but we had, like, the wine float or whatever. I drank all of that, and then on top of that, your mom bought a bottle that me and her shared. You had, like, 2 or 3 bottles on your own, and then I went and bought one by myself that you ended up taking, so.
And on top of me also drinking all of the samplers, because I was like, I'm not spitting in that bucket, that's nasty, I'm just going to swallow it.
Yeah. But anyway, so we still would not have compared to Michael. No. It sounded like he was, like, drinking alcohol almost as water, so he built up a resistance.
Yeah, which happens.
You would still think, like, because this took 4 days that he just drank and drank and drank, and nothing happened, you know?
You think his liver would have gave up.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, after the 4th day, the murder trust started to get angry.
I wonder why.
Tony was getting pretty frustrated, which I'm not sure if it was Tony the bartender or the bar owner Tony or Tony Bastion.
I'm sure it was probably the bartender because, like, I'm giving this guy all this free stuff and I'm not getting paid for it. I'm losing money. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what it was, is that he was like, you know, I'm going to go into debt if we keep letting this guy just drink my bar dry. So they stepped up their game. So there's this thing called wood alcohol, also known as crude methanol, yeah, which is made by distilling wood.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a type of alcohol that's nowadays we use to make antifreeze, pesticides, windshield wiper fluid, and paint thinner.
Jeez.
Sounds yummy, right? This
stuff was some strong shit.
I mean, they obviously didn't have the same uses for it back then, but it's pretty much, I think it's considered an industrial alcohol. So, you were not supposed to drink it, so don't go find wood alcohol and drink it.
Don't go start drinking Kool-Aid and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. As good as it looks, don't do it.
Actually, if you were to accidentally ingest wood alcohol, the following symptoms would occur: headache, dizziness, nausea, lack of coordination, and confusion. Significantly large doses cause unconsciousness and death.
Jeez.
So I don't know what they used it for back then, but I think it said like 4% of people that actually like had wood alcohol would actually like die from it or something like that, which is crazy.
Wow.
So why would I bring up wood alcohol? They decided to give him this instead of gin or whiskey. They actually just and they didn't even just like mix it into his drink. They would just get him a little bit drunk and then start giving him straight up shots of wood alcohol. They watched him do this for several days, and... Oh, wait. I jumped a little bit. They watched him as he downed several shots of blood alcohol, and nothing happened to this man. Nothing. He just showed the normal sides of being drunk. Quote, he didn't know that he was... I can't read quotes. Yep. All right. Quote, he didn't know that what he was drinking was wood alcohol, reported the New York Evening Post, and what he didn't know apparently didn't hurt him. He drank all the wood alcohol he was given and came back for more.
Wow.
So, a few nights passed of this scene occurring. They would give him some cheap alcohol to start, just to get him buzzed, and then they would make the switch. Which is, it's just so messed up, you know, to think of all this.
Yeah.
One night, while everyone was at the bar, watching and waiting like predators about to pounce on their prey, Michael collapsed to the floor. And then they thought they'd done it. They had finally killed him.
Yay, finally!
Or did they?
Oh, maybe
Frank
not.
Frank Pasquale checked his pulse and noticed that it was faint. So they decided to wait it out. Like, he's on the way out. Yeah, he's on the way out. And just when they thought he was done, he began to snore. This man fell asleep, drinking wood alcohol. He would wake up the next day and be perfectly fine. A little groggy, but fine. Now, obviously, the wood alcohol wasn't going to do anything. So instead of giving up and letting this man live, they once again upped their game. I mean, the wood alcohol, the free regular alcohol, they even fed him sandwiches, like, in between to try and, like, you know, make him stay there, I guess, to drink more. It was starting to add up, and Tony, the bartender, was worried that he would go bankrupt if they let him keep drinking.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure he'd already, like, expended whatever amount he was getting on this guy. Like, he's already, like, he's already done. Like, I'd be lucky if I get 500 from this now.
Because if you think about it, he's literally like, he's just buying all this wood alcohol on top of whatever alcohol that he serves.
Which I'm sure they were overpricing because it was during the Prohibition, so there was no like, oh yeah, you can, you know, blah blah blah. It's like, hey, you're not supposed to have this. I'm gonna need to charge more.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Well, the wood alcohol, they probably could have got perfectly fine because it's not something you're supposed to drink.
Oh, okay. Well,
like,
yeah, maybe.
It made it, the U.S. government actually made it taste bad so people wouldn't drink it.
Like they did with Nintendo Switch cartridges.
Yeah, yeah, where you lick the back of it and it tastes
weird. If you ever, if you guys don't believe us, like, you find all kinds of videos all over YouTube about it. If you lick the back of it. I did it because I wasn't sure. I was like, I don't believe it. I have a Nintendo Switch. I licked the back of a Nintendo Switch cartridge and I almost threw up. It was so bad. I was like,
they put, like, it's not even like sour or
no, anything. it's like bad. It's like severe Bitrex that they put on it, and it like makes your tongue like, you know, you ever seen that scene from SpongeBob when he tries Gary's food and his tongue like and it shrivels up? That's what it felt like.
So they took that wood alcohol and they would put something in it to just make it undrinkable or, you know, obviously not enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even if someone wanted to get drunk, because most of those symptoms that I was saying are kind of symptoms of being drunk, but, like, you're also, like, risking way more of, like, a death sentence than regular alcohol.
Yeah.
You know? So, obviously, all of this... This, like, plan number one or whatever that they were doing wasn't working. And then the wood alcohol wasn't working. So they had to come up with a different plan. And that's where we're going to leave part one. I know this is kind of a smaller episode, but I want to make people wait for part two. Because...
Wait till you find out what they did after.
Yeah, because part two is really messed up.
Yeah. We got to save the juiciness for a whole episode.
So, like, right now... He's just drinking a lot of stuff. Part two, they're going to up their game a lot. It involves cars. It involves gas. It involves metal shards. So, yeah.
Jesus.
Stick around for part two. Do you have anything else to say, Ellie? Excellent. All right. So, we'll see you guys in part two.
Catch you later.